And welcome to episode 13 of season 9 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the final two Die Hard movies, Die Hard 4, Live Free or Die Hard, and Die Hard 5, A Good Day to Die Hard, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, and hopefully over the next few days, is Nick Rehack of the Rabbit Hole Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Hey, Rob, thank you so much for having me back, man.
Yeah, I'm psyched to have you on this. I really am. I've been looking forward to this for a long time to be able to talk to you about these movies. You know, especially, I know we bring this up every single time, especially since you and I talked about Die Hard on your couch. So there you go.
Which is a fond memory, and it's still one of those surreal things to think about. Like, oh yeah, like most of these podcasts, especially with you being a traveler of the world, if you will, we meet people from all over, and we have to record over Zoom or any other type of software. But to be able to sit down with somebody and actually see them face to face, it's a whole other just experience altogether. And I'm so fortunate that we have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, it's been 3 years. Unbelievable.
I find that so hard to believe. 3 years.
So do I. Oh. So do I. Yeah, really is. But hey, yeah, our friendship has remained over that time.
That is true. That is true.
We will have to find time to reconnect in person once again.
Absolutely.
Excellent. All right. So episode 13 begins with Farrell being quite proud of himself, and ends with John having a duel at half a foot. So we left things off yesterday with Farrell using his wits to try and convince the woman in the car, the electronic voice woman in the car, to start the car for them. You know, and so we got to say thank you to Dolores for that one. why don't we start with what's your background with this movie, Nick?
I remember seeing this movie like one time, and I don't remember why I saw it. I think I just saw it because it was just the next one in the series that had come out. So I'm like, yeah, I'll go watch this. So I saw it. I completely forgot. Upon rewatching this for the show, I completely forgot that Timothy Oliphant was in it. Completely forgot that, spoilers, Kevin Smith is in it. There's just a lot of the film that I don't remember at all. I just, obviously, the big set pieces from the trailer, which have since already happened in the film here. But revisiting it, it was weird because at times I'm like, okay, this is kind of like a Die Hard film. And other times I'm like, this could kind of be a James Bond film. At times it feels like it's a movie that was just kind of standalone. They pulled him in and said, hey, let's put John McClane in this, do some tweaks here and there, and then build upon it and make it something a little bit better. And for the most part, it's fine and it's okay. I think by today's standards, unfortunately, it's just a little dated because of the technology. But it's still fun. Like, it's still a fun watch. There's still some great action sequences. I think it's a little too heavy on the green screen for my liking, but it could have just been issues with the shoot when it was happening. I'm not sure. But overall, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would when I rewatched it.
Okay. That's fair. I mean, I've said this so many times, and I'm sure I will keep saying it through the rest of this dual season. You know, my problem with these two Die Hard movies is they don't feel like Die Hard movies. They feel more like action movies.
Yeah.
And that's why, for me, there's the Die Hard trilogy, yeah, and then there's these two movies, which this one, there is enough to enjoy along the way. Mm-hmm. The fifth one, forget about that. the enjoyment of watching the fifth one is tearing it apart.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is what I hope to be, I expect to be doing, you know, within the next few weeks once we start getting into that one.
Absolutely.
But you know, but this one is bearable from that perspective. I mean, like you said, it's a little tech, it's a little early 21st century tech heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But It still brings up fond memories, and I'm sure we'll talk about that over the next few days.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the fun tech stuff that they bring up, you know, that is completely obsolete today, it's been rearranged, changed, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, Farrell finally, you know, starts this segment with a huge grin on his face, And we hear the seatbelt chime, and he goes, "Thank you, Dolores." And then we get a shot of John, who looks pretty impressed. You know, we all know that John is not a technophile. He has always been against that stuff. So he's finally, okay, well, this kid knows what he's doing in order to be able to help us get this car moving.
Yeah, and almost like he's starting to come around to it.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. And at this point, Farrell then turns to him and goes, "Pass me the PDA. I got to call the warlock." Okay, so here we were just talking about dealing with obsolete technology. What is a PDA?
It is a personal data assistant.
Correct. Oh, actually, it's a personal digital assistant.
Digital assistant, okay. Because I think there was Palm Pilot. I know BlackBerry
that's
for a
right.
while was big. Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's right. That's where that started. But I'm actually going to even go a little further back before we start talking about the actual PDA. So I looked up the phrase PDA, and I got so many different hits
mm-hmm.
of things, and it just made me crack a smile thinking about some of these things. So I'll just talk about some of them. So we have parts departing aircraft.
Never heard of that.
It's where mid-air loss of screws, rivets, doors, etc.
Okay.
So I guess you can sort of say, back with the space shuttle, when they would always talk about how the tiles would fall off and stuff like that. So that's a PDA. That's a parts departing aircraft.
Okay.
You know, the idea that certain parts of the plane or the aircraft were not fastened properly and came out, so. You have a patron-driven acquisition, which is it's the way that libraries purchase books.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, patron-driven acquisition. Yeah, because how else are they getting it? Probably from, donate your books here. Boom, that's a PDA. Okay.
That's right. That's right. You have a pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma, which Ooh. Is the main type of pancreatic cancer. It's also known as a PDA.
Mm.
You have pathological demand avoidance in psychology. There is an artery in the human body called the posterior descending artery, which is a PDA.
Okay. All right.
You have a potato dextrose agar, or AJAR, which is a microbiological media for culturing yeast and fungus.
Wow, that is very specific.
You have four songs that are called that are named PDA. Are you familiar with any of them? I know you're a music guy.
Nothing's jumping out at me, no.
Okay, so there's a song by Interpol called PDA.
Okay.
I've never heard of them. The Backstreet Boys have a song called PDA, which is on the album This Is Us.
Okay.
Audio Adrenaline has a song named PDA. And John Legend has a song called PDA, We Just Don't Care.
Okay. You got me on three of them. I am familiar with Interpol. I am familiar with John Legend and obviously the Backstreet Boys. But the audio one, never heard of those guys before.
Okay. I don't know anything about those. That's, you have from NASCAR, the Professional Driver Association is known as a PDA.
Okay. I mean, I feel like they could have gotten a little more creative in naming that, especially for NASCAR. But
yeah, probably. you have PDA, Public Display of Affection.
I think that's the one that nowadays people are most familiar with, yeah.
Yeah. But I think, don't people usually say TMI instead of PDA from that?
No, I think TMI would have been like, oh, hey, I was with so-and-so last night and we did X, Y, and Z. Then you'd be like, whoa, TMI, TMI. But instead, if you're
PDA
like...
PDA is that they did it in front of everybody.
Exactly. Like in okay. high school, two kids holding hands, it'd be like, oh, PDA, and everyone make them, embarrass them and be like, oh, look at you guys holding hands.
Right. Okay. And the final one that I have on this list is the Pregnancy Discrimination Act.
Okay. All
which
right.
is a look. Okay, so let's get into the personal digital assistant. So as you said, the basically a personal digital assistant is a multi-purpose mobile device which functions as a personal information manager, and was used mostly in the 90s and early 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that most people started using smartphones basically drove those out of business.
Yeah, killed it
real
quick.
I remember having a Palm Pilot back in the mid 90s. You know, and it was like so cool. But now when you think about it, it's like, oh my God, it was so ancient based on what we have now.
Yeah, very much
you know,
so.
There's so much more that you can do on your own phone now than you were able to do on all these other things back then.
Oh, it's insane. And the size and speed and all of that. When I was young and still in high school, so from 06 to 08, I worked at Best Buy. And I was in the computers department and the cell phones department. So I was really very familiar with, like, PDAs and cell phones because I'd have to, like, sell them and activate them, all that other stuff. And I can always remember thinking, like, man, how come they don't just put the two together? Or, oh, it'd be cool if you could do this feature on this or that feature on that. And then all of a sudden I'm in college and there's the big announcement. Steve Jobs comes out and boom, here's the iPhone. And everyone just lost their mind. I'm glad I was out of retail when that happened because it would have just been a madhouse every day. But it's still really wild to know that we were of an era that the two were completely separate. And now they're just together. And some people will only ever know smartphones. They will never know, which nowadays, can't we just say phone? Because they're all they're all smart at doing that, right? We don't need to say smartphone anymore.
Good point. It's definitely a good point. No, it's really funny. Like, you know, I've teenagers and they'll say to me, oh, well, you know, you don't, you know, when you were a kid, you didn't use, you know, your phone as an alarm clock or whatever. And like, when I was a kid, there were no phones.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just.
I still have an alarm clock.
So do I. So do I. When do you think the very first PDA came out?
It's probably some weird. My gut says early 70s, but I'm going to push back on that a little bit. And let's say 80. Well, what was that, 1984? Or, well, let's go in 1984.
Nick, you hit it right on the money. 1984. A company named Scion.
I've never heard of them before.
Neither have I. They created the very first PDA, which was known as the Organizer.
That makes sense.
Which, obviously, I see a picture of it, and it just resembles a calculator. That's what it looks like.
Huh.
But... you know, and then 7 years later, they came out with the next version of it, which resembles more what we know of as PDAs after that, mm-hmm. Which had a full keyboard and stuff like that. Now, the term PDA itself was first coined in 1992 on January 7th by the CEO of Apple, John Sculley. He was at a consumer electronics show in Las Vegas, and he was referring to the Apple Newton as a PDA.
Hmm.
And the I guess the nickname or the explanation of what a PDA just stuck from that person from that that time on.
That makes sense.
IBM started making PDAs in 1994. So again, it was 10 years before they started doing it. Nokia in 96, the Palm company started also in 96,
mm-hmm.
and Palm basically outdid everybody with the stuff that they had. And but once people started dealing with cellulars, so you know, Palm just didn't work anymore either.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so it's just very funny that, you know, looking at this timeline and seeing that Farrell is still using a PDA. You know, he's not even saying, you know, give me my phone. It's give me my PDA.
Yeah, because at that point, you can't make calls on, so why would you say phone?
Correct. But no, but people were using phones predominantly already at this point in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that wasn't anything new.
Mm.
And so then John and Farrell start their drive. John basically says, so right after Farrell says, "I gotta call the warlock," he goes, "The what?" He goes, "The warlock. He's a digital Jedi. He's amazing." And then they have like this suspenseful theme playing. And then we get a shot of Mai in the FBI helicopter showing up at the Eastern Power Hub in Middleton, West Virginia, which we already know is not a real place. There is no Middleton, West Virginia. She confidently gets out of the helicopter, and you have guards that show up to try to stop her. So then Mai approaches the guard and pulls out her FBI or fake FBI badge, and we hear him scream, "Ma'am, you're not authorized to be here." She goes, "FBI, we suspect there's been a security breach. No, you can't land here without authorization." And then he basically just gets shot. By her. No, then she takes him and then she uses some of her martial arts and knocks him out. And the second guy that starts running towards her, she just hits him in the face and he falls down the stairs. And then the other fake agents that are with her end up shooting another guy who's trying to stop them. That's on the helipad itself. So yeah, they know how to take out these guys.
A little bit.
They had this planned well, and it's good for the rest of the movie that there is this helicopter just sitting there on the launch pad. It makes you wonder why, but hey. And then we're back with John and Farrell having their little drive, and they pass a really interesting sign. Did you happen to notice the sign that they pass?
Welcome to West Virginia.
Nope, before that, there's another sign.
Then no.
So it's Timber Ridge, and then it says 760 West. Now, it makes it seem as if this is like some sort of resort or something like that. I spent way too much time trying to find out, and there apparently, just like there's no real Middleton, West Virginia, there is no resort in West Virginia named Timber Ridge, even though the term Timber Ridge does fit in with West Virginia. Do you have any idea how it fits in?
Probably just the side of a mountain with a lot of timber that they were gonna log.
No, Timber Ridge is actually a mountain ridge, crosses Virginia and West Virginia.
Oh, so it's a part of the Appalachians then.
It's part of the Appalachians, correct. So it's the area is predominantly forested, as its name suggests, and there are some orchards and open fields and stuff like that that are also there. Basically, there are a number of summits that you have along the way, and the main one is the Chine Spring Knob, which is 1,312 feet, 400 meters.
Wow, okay.
And then the car right after passing that passes a sign that says, "Welcome to West Virginia, open for business."
Which I don't think it would have said that then, right? Wouldn't it have said wild and wonderful? That's been their slogan for a while.
All right, it's a good thing that you mentioned that because
I'm sorry, I'm
you are
jumping the gun.
sort of, no, not at all. You are sort of right with that. So the the whole idea of the slogan is very interesting because up until 2006, the or actually we can even go further back, up until 19 from 1975 to 1991, the roadway signs and the license plates in West Virginia said "Wild Wonderful." That was the thing. In 1991, they stopped using it, and there was no slogan between 1991 and 2005.
Really?
Okay. And apparently, the politicians basically said, well, it didn't really matter because nobody really seemed to notice that they didn't have it. And then in 2006, you had Joe Manchin, who was elected governor. And during his State of the State address in 2006, he said that he was going to change it. He changed the name to "Open for Business," the slogan for open for business.
Okay.
And that actually lasted for not very long because they actually people protested and didn't like the fact that they had it. And they actually had a statewide vote as to what the slogan should be. And the winner was once again Wild Wonderful. It went back to that, where the other choices were Almost Heaven and the Mountain State.
Okay.
There were
All right.
there were
Well, I think Almost Heaven's on their license plate now or something, unless I'm making that up.
I don't know. It's very possible. And basically, so for 2 years, the slogan "Open for Business" was being used, and it was actually being used during the course of when they were making this movie, because it was brought back on November 2nd, 2007. And this movie came out in the summer of 2007, so it was it, it's borderline, but I just thought it was a very when I saw it, and I don't live near West Virginia like you do. And it seemed a little off to me. That's why I did a little bit of digging to find out what that would be. And I just thought it was really funny that it was only for a very short period that they used it, because it's just not a very good slogan.
Yeah, no, it makes it seem like there was an event that happened and no one could get to West Virginia for whatever reason, and then magically, like, it was okay again. It's like, no, like, it's always been wild and wonderful. Okay.
That's right. That's right. And then you can see on the side, it also says the name of the governor. It says Joe Mancini the third on the side there also.
Okay.
And he was governor till 2010, and then he actually won a seat in the Senate. He basically resigned from the governorship in order to take over the Senate seat of Robert Byrd, who after dying, so they had a runoff for it, and he won that instead, which is very interesting that a governor would leave their post in order to take a senatorial seat. I mean, it's one thing if once they're done they go for that, because I mean that's happened also, but to leave the governor's mansion at that point is both strange and commendable, I guess you can say,
It's definitely
because
baffling because it's one of those things where I feel like you can make more of a difference as a governor than you could as
okay,
like
but it
an
could be
entry
because of
level.
true, but it could be maybe their term limits and things like that. I mean, there it could be that when his when his governorship was going to end, maybe in 2 years he knew that he needed to then vacate the position anyway. I mean, you have that in Florida right now. One of the two senators, I'm trying to remember his name right now, is actually the former governor, who finished his he finished his governorship and then ran to be the ran to take one of the Senate seats.
Interesting.
So
Okay.
it's a different way of governing. Rick Scott, that's the one I was thinking of.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's weird. Okay.
Basically the way that they decided to do things there. And at this point, John and Farrell continue their conversation, and John goes, "Oh, pretty good back there, kid." He goes, "Thanks." And then he turns to him and goes, "What's the matter with you? Nothing else to complain about?" "No, just what? What's the matter with you? It's not funny. I'm not like you. I can't do this." "What do you mean? What does that mean? Like what? It I'm not like heroic or anything. I'm," and he laughs and goes, not brave like you are. I'm not that guy." And John turns to him and goes, "I'm nobody's hero, kid." He goes, "You saved my life like 10 times in the last 6 hours. Just doing my job, that's all." "Ah. Now, know what you get for being a hero? Nothing. You get shot at, you get a little pat on the back, blah, blah, blah. That a boy. Get divorced. Wife that can't remember your last name. Kids don't want to talk to you. Get to eat a whole lot of meals by yourself. Trust me, kid. Nobody wants to be that guy. Then why are you doing this? Because there's nobody else to do it right now. That's why. Believe me, if there was someone else to do it, I would let them do it. But there's not. So we're doing it. And that's what makes you that guy. So I like the conversation. It does flow between them, and it sort of gives us a little bit more insight into what's happened to John over the last 12 years since we last saw him. I mean, we knew he's divorced, but you know, to show some of his disappointment with the way things are, I guess you could say.
Yeah, a little bit of melancholy, a little bit of self-reflection that we don't really, a little bit of vulnerability, just a little bit, not too much.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. But again, it's a nice way to try to connect these two characters.
Yeah, it really is. Because in a way, I feel like you have, you know, Matthew's character feeling like, man, I'm not enough, or I can't do this. And maybe to an extent, you know, McClane's feeling that same way about himself when it comes to like his personal life, when it comes to his kids and his wife, like, oh man, I'm not enough. And they kind of have that little thing in common. And when you can start to develop that little bit you have in common, then you can learn to grow together as people. And they certainly do as the film progresses.
Yeah, it's true. Again, I part of my problem, and I've mentioned this before, and I'm sure I'll mention it again. My problem here with using Farrell, it feels too much like something they were doing around this time where they were trying to bring in characters into franchises to possibly, you know, pass the baton to.
Yeah, I can
and
see that.
It feels a little bit like that. Not that Farrell really can be a John McClane, but the idea is that Farrell is maybe the tech version of John McClane type of thing.
Yeah, feeling out what that next generation could be like. It doesn't have to be, like you said, an exact, hey, kid, here's the badge and the gun. But what does that next iteration look like? Can they push it, like you said, into a more techie angle and then maybe start something new from there, a new trilogy, right, or series or franchise, something like that?
Exactly. Which if that was the case, it'd... And then we're back in the truck, the mega truck that they've given us. Mm-hmm. You know, that the bad guys are using as their lair. I think I called it the truck lair. You know, I think that's the best way to describe it.
It's pretty cool.
It's very cool. And at this point, we see Casper, you know, quite excited. He goes, things fly now. He's quite happy about the fact that, you know, that the stuff that they're trying to take from Woodlawn is downloading much faster than he thought they would.
Always a positive for them.
Yeah. And then basically Gabriel looks at him and says, contact Emerson. Tell him we'll be there soon. And, you know, just small little, you know, phrases coming from Gabriel, just giving, barking his orders here and there.
Mm-hmm. Little backs and forths.
Yeah, exactly. And we get an external shot of the truck continuing on its way. And then it jumps to Mai, who is back inside of the power plant. And she's coming down the stairs. And then we see a guy in a white lab coat that says, what the hell are you doing? This whole root floor is restricted access. And then she just shoots him.
Yeah, pretty much. Here's your access.
We hear like a big thud, exactly. So the actor who plays this is, this was actually very interesting to me. His name is Edward James Gage. And he's listed in the credits here as the on-duty PP operator. Hmm. Yeah, which
power plant.
Which is an interesting power plant, exactly. it says on-duty PP operator. There you go. And so he's an actor who was born on April 24th, 1960. He has 88 IMDb credits.
Whoa.
And when I started doing research on this on this movie, so I was on my way to finishing rewatching once again The Big Bang Theory, mm-hmm. and I had just seen him like the week before on an episode as like a mailman, which I just thought was hilarious that,
Huh.
here I saw him there and then I see him here. And before he became an actor, he had a very interesting job. For 13 years, he worked as a private investigator, bounty hunter, and a bodyguard.
What?
Yep. That's just really cool.
I mean, the stories the man could tell, I bet he could write a couple movies.
Probably. Probably. he also played football in college. He majored in biology at the same time.
Okay.
Very, very eclectic.
I bet that's a very good word for it, yes.
And then Mai just like walks over to where this guy now is lying back dead, and someone just unceremoniously pulls him up and throws him on the ground.
Yeah, yesterday's news.
Yeah, more or less. Now, one of the things that I found very interesting was the fact that this guy has a white lab coat. So where do you think the idea of white lab coats came from?
That probably didn't happen until, I want to say, the early 1900s, when they were starting to do a little more like chemical engineering. And they didn't want like chemicals and stuff spilled on him. I don't think it had anything to do with like being a doctor in blood and surgery like that, because they didn't start washing their hands until late in the game for that. So I'm going to say some type of chemical engineering.
Okay, so they used to have people in black lab coats and white lab coats. So up until the mid 1920s, they would have black lab coats for people that were dealing with cadavers. When students were studying about cadavers, in order to show respect for the dead.
Interesting.
And
Okay.
then when they started doing early biomedical and microbiology laboratories. All these different type of tests and things like that. Then they continued wearing black coats. And at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, physicians started changing wearing black to white coats because they basically said, okay, the black coats are going to be for the surgeons, and the white ones are for everyone else.
Interesting.
And so like the anesthesiologists would be using white and things like that. And the idea became that white coats were symbolic of fields that didn't have blood. So they didn't have to worry about mess and bloodiness and things like that, because if you have a black coat, that's not going to get stained by the fact that you're going to have blood spurting out or anything like that. But a white coat is more of a problem.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. Yeah. Huh. Okay.
So the in the in 19 the late 1970s, they started using what are known as Howie style lab coats, named after James Howie, who was one of the first people who started using it. And the idea was that it's even more protective of their clothing because it was a wraparound full coverage lab coat.
Instead of
To
like a smock or a
indicate,
gown or something.
yeah,
Okay.
yeah. And it apparently looks like a chef's uniform, but the idea is to minimize any type of contact with street clothes,
Makes sense.
things like that. So, yeah. Just thought that was interesting. So Mai puts down their gun, and they open a case, which obviously they always do that in movies. You have a case with a computer inside. This is before people really use laptops, I guess you could say.
Built in.
And and the stuff that they have popping out, and they have a rolled up keyboard and stuff like that, which those are keyboards that are made of silicon. That it doesn't look like it's something very comfortable to use, but I guess if the situation requires it, then it makes sense, from that perspective. So I'm not going to talk too much about the keyboards because there's so much to talk about with keyboards, but Do you know typically how many keys there are on a keyboard?
So I'm
On a
weirdly.
standard, sorry, on a standard keyboard and not like on a laptop, because laptop will obviously have less.
Right. I'm weirdly into this because I'm in a community of like minimalist keyboards where you have like 54 keys or something like that. So I think a standard one is like 104, 108, something like that.
Perfect. It's 101 to 105,
All
depending
right.
on
Close.
the thing. Yeah, that's true. I never even thought about it. You know, like I use a laptop, and I look at my laptop, and like I'm thinking to myself, okay, I'm not gonna go sit and count them all, but obviously you have 26 letters, and you have at least 10, if not 20 numbers, because depending if you have a keypad on the side also,
Yep, function keys.
and then you have all the function, you have 12 function keys. So like eventually it adds up.
Yeah.
So yeah, it really is gonna work its way up there. But again, we see that Mai is we've seen this before, but she's very technically agile, like everyone else on Gabriel's team. You know, which again makes sense. And then we get a shot outside that shows us the transition between day and night. And as night falls, we see a car pulling up with, hey, who's in the car? John and Farrell. And smartly, John's driving without headlights, which makes sense. And then he turns to Farrell and goes, stay here.
Because that always goes
And
well.
yeah, of course. And Farrell isn't too happy about that. And he goes, all right, come on. Yeah, I think it's more that Farrell is just scared to be there by himself.
Could
You
be.
know, he needs the protector.
Yeah.
You know, John McClane, the protector.
John McClane, that guy.
That's right.
You know, it was kind of it always confused me how he would just walk away but leave the car door open. Like, why wouldn't you close it? Why leave it open? I didn't understand that moment in the film.
Well, what's even crazier for me when I think about it is that, okay, well, you know, the nowadays if you leave a car door open and the keys are on, and the you know the car is turned on, it's gonna start beeping.
Yeah, it's gonna ding. Yeah, exactly. And I was kind of waiting for a ding to happen. I'm like, all right, maybe he turned it off. I'm not sure. We can't really tell because he comes in, lights off, and everything. But when he just got up and left, I'm like, so we're not closing it? And I thought maybe he's like looking for a gate or a door to open and then he would get back into the car. But then he just keeps going, and I'm like, okay, I guess we're not doing that this time.
Well, I have an even more interesting question. How does he stop the car completely? And maybe he can't turn it off. Because remember, Dolores turned the car on for them. He doesn't have a key.
I didn't even think about that. That makes a lot of sense.
So he just is able to just put it in park and that's it.
Yep, that makes a
You
whole
have,
lot of sense.
you know, you step on the brake, you put it in park, and the car's not going to move, but it's still on
Yeah.
because you can't turn it off unless you call back Dolores and say, okay, turn it off. And I don't think they're going to be doing that for some strange reason. So, no. And then, you know, John starts scouting the area out. We see that he sees an empty office. And as he's looking around, he sees a helicopter, which might be useful later this week, maybe. I don't know. He also sees a van that might be helpful in the next few days. You know, it's interesting that we get to see these few little items that will be of more importance later.
Yeah, a lot of seeds are being planted right now.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot of Chekhov stuff around here. And you know, John silently tries to work his way around, and you know, he's a little confused about what's going on. You know, he ends up going over towards the helicopter. Sees that nobody's in the helicopter and decides to you know, go around it. But you also can see that the helicopter door is also open. So maybe it's something that I don't know. Maybe it's something that everyone in this movie just doesn't have the courtesy to close doors.
Could be just a lot of rude people.
That's right. That's right. Or they're just everyone wants to have an easy getaway.
Could be,
You
could
can look
be.
at it from that perspective also. You know the yin and the yang of it all. It's very possible. And then we're back with Mai, who's with two other guys, trying to break into the system or use the system that's we get a nice shot of the good old USA, and we see that the entire eastern seaboard is lit in green, which obviously is telling us that this is what this particular power plant is in charge of.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she types in a whole bunch of stuff, and then finally gets back. You know, she looks into the briefcase computer, and you know, is able to talk to Gabriel, who's using an early version of Skype or Zoom, that the two of them can talk to one another. And she goes, "We're in." He goes, "Good. Shut it down." And you know, then they show us the computer screen, and we get to zoom in and see all of West Virginia, you know, in green, with a whole bunch of different things that she's just you know, starting to deal with the whole thing. And again, I've talked about this numerous times already, that every time they show us a computer screen, there's so many things going on that screen.
Yeah, almost too much, too, if we're being honest.
Definitely, there's too much going on, but on the other hand, there's a lot of things that are going on that if you look at it by pausing, you see like a lot of mistakes and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know. And, you know, then we see on the screen, it says power grid manual override shutdown procedure. And if you look on the side, it says connection status. And then it says... establishing connection is blocked, IP address connection established. So how can you connect to a blocked IP address?
You can connect, but you couldn't do a transfer, if that makes I know that doesn't make any sense.
I understand. No, obviously I understand what you're talking about from that perspective, but no, I just find it funny that it says, you know, I guess they just didn't want to put up a, you know, a fake IP address there anyway. So they'll say it's a blocked one.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
You know, so there are many different reasons of why it could be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just very funny that the, and then, you know, they give us a lot of visual graphics of the, you know, the green turning red as she starts closing off the various sections. And then the shot changes and we're back with John and Farrell, who are in another office, trying to figure out what's going on. And then John says to him, "Guess you were right, kid." Because they now get to see the two dead, you know, FBI guards we saw earlier that they killed. One of them, you see a nice headshot that, you know, they shot him right in the forehead.
Clean.
Yeah, seriously. And then Farrell looks at him and goes, "Okay, that's awful."
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a little grossed out. Probably one of the first times that he's really seen dead bodies up close.
Yeah, I was always kind of surprised he didn't freak out more, but I think he's so overwhelmed by everything else that his reaction is just, it plays to comedic effect perfectly, but I think it also just makes sense that he would have that reaction of just being like, instead of having a complete breakdown of, "Oh no, here's a dead body," it's more like, "Oh, here's something else. Like, great. Like, what more could possibly go wrong? What more horrors could I possibly see today?"
Exactly. And then one of Mai's henchmen sees on the screen, he sees John Farrell, and he goes, "We got company." Yeah, and so they start getting ready to act. Mai just gives them a look, and the two of them take off in order to go. Take care of John. And she continues with her hacking. And then John is once again confused. And he says to Farrell, "So how would they shut down the power grid?" He goes, "What? Come on. Central control room. Okay." And then Farrell is able to figure out where it is. He goes, "Okay, fourth floor. Come on." And the two of them start working their way to try and find out where it's going to be. I mean, it's interesting that they have a map on a screen to tell them where they need to go.
Yeah, it's weird.
Very convenient.
Almost too convenient.
Exactly. And then Farrell figures it out, and the two of them are on their way. And then we see the two henchmen running back and forth, trying to figure out where they're going to go. And then one of them says to the other, take a right. And he goes, right. Which, if this was a airplane-type comedy, that would have been comedy gold.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, take a right. Right. Under, over, captain, over.
What's our Roger? Or what's our vector, Roger. Victor?
That's right.
We have Clarence.
9 times.
Oh, thank you for that.
You're very welcome. How could I forget that? How can I forget
never
that you and I love saying that? There you go. And so these two guys take off in different directions. John and Farrell are on their way there. They are on the way trying to figure out where they're going to the control center. And they pass a sign that says, 400 volts, danger. And then there's another sign that says, walk, exclamation point. Do not run on stairs.
Meanwhile, our intrepid heroes.
That's right. And then John pulls Farrell back a little bit as he decides to figure out what to do. And then, he goes up pretty quickly to these stairs. He's not running. He does follow the instructions that of what he was told he needs to do, and he opens up the chain link fence, which squeaks a little bit, and then John turns to Farrell and goes shh, which is really funny because John's the one who makes the noise.
Yeah.
and then Farrell goes, I'm just gonna stop right here for him. just try to keep up. He goes, I am keeping up. I just want to stop for 2 seconds to catch a breath. He goes, they have these things called gymnasiums.
Which, by the way, who calls it that? Who, since you've left school, call it a gymnasium? Only ever in high school and middle school would I heard it called a gymnasium. Everywhere else, it's just obviously they are gymnasiums. And we're all just shortening it and using the word gym. But who says the entire thing? You know what I mean? Who says that anymore?
That's right. John opens up a door and his reflexes are amazing because he catches one of the guys who's has a gun pointed at them, and John pushes the gun up, and the two of them shoot at one another, both doing a matrix and moving their heads in the opposite direction so that they safely make it through. Yeah. So this is definitely Point Blank Range. There's no question about that. So you got to give both John and this other guy a lot of credit.
And not only for that, but not for grabbing their ears and screaming because of how loud that shot would have been right next to each other's heads.
That's right. But it's a movie
magic.
Movie sounds.
There you go.
And that's how this 5-minute segment ends. Did you have anything else you wanted to discuss about it?
The only thing I wanted to discuss about, and I'm sure you've touched on it in previous episodes and you'll touch on it in further episodes, is just the idea and love that I have for Hollywood, especially in this era when they portray anything kind of techie, any kind of user interface on a screen, how it's all just very colorful and here's images. Obviously, it's all for the viewer, for us to get a quick glimpse and say, okay, here's a map of West Virginia and portions of the East Coast. These are the different sectors they're shutting down one by one in order to, complete their mission, right? It's all for us. But
yes. It's
just funny to think that in the real world would never do anything like that. They would try to keep it as monotone as possible. They would try to have, as much data, like letters and numbers on there, than actual shapes and things, because they want that computing power to go to the speed and the precision of the machines and not waste all that time, for colors and images and things like that. So right. it always gives me a kick, especially watching older films like this, like the way they're hacking. And now it's also kind of cool how they're hacking in with these, because they're using phones, they're using laptops, they've got portable attachments. Her Maya's keyboard is really cool. Like, I really liked how it's just that kind of rubbery. It folds out, plug in, and off you go. So while there are some practical and realistic aspects to what they're doing, the also like the Hollywoodized version, if you will, is like kind of funny at the same time.
For sure. Yeah, again, I mean, I mentioned it before when we talked about the keyboard. Keyboard looks cool, but it doesn't look comfortable to use
No, it's very quick and
in an
dirty.
everyday situation. Yeah. Our segment today is Top Cop, where my guest will give their top five movie police detectives or policemen, however you want to deal with that one. So why don't you once again start with your number five and work your way up?
My number five is going to be probably my more favorite recent detective, and that's going to be Chan Wing Yan from Infernal Affairs. That's Tony Leung's character. Really enjoy that. That's a series I started watching more recently, and that's been a lot of fun to watch. There's three films out, so check them out.
That's the series that The Departed is based on.
Correct. Yes. Yep. Infernal Affairs, the first one. If you were to play that and The Departed next to each other, I mean, you're going to get 90% the same film. There are some things that are shot for shot, and it is striking. Like, it is really, really impressive. Another one for me is going to be Park Doo-man, the lead detective in Memories of Murder, played by Song Kang-ho. Memories of Murder is a film I came to, I think, a couple years ago. I watched it and just completely blown away and loved it. This character, not the best detective, not the worst. His heart's in the right place, but sometimes his methods aren't like the best. Number three is going to be Will Graham, played by William Peterson in 1986's Manhunter. Always loved that performance, always thought it was great. Number two, Special Agent Starling. Obviously, Jodie Foster from Silence of the Lambs. And my number one is going to be Eddie
That's sort of
Valiant.
a cheat because you've got two from the same series.
I thought about that, but I thought, you know what?
It's fine. No,
Why
Will
not?
Graham and Starling are completely different. I just think it's funny that you're gonna go for that, but that's fine.
I battled with it, but at the end, I'm like, you know what? One Lecter is Brian Cox, the other one is Anthony Hopkins. And they're still like, he just kind of shows up, right? He's more of like their Moriarty, excuse me, not Moriarty, their Watson than they is their Moriarty. So that's how I kind of made it okay in my mind.
Okay. No, that's fine.
My number one for me was Eddie Valiant, played by Bob Hoskins in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. That was one of the first characters watching, being like, oh man, I kind of want to be a detective. Like, I want to go solving crimes and mysteries and things like that. And as I got older, I'm like, man, it's a whole lot of work. He could have gotten some serious trouble.
That's right. You got a lot of pounding the strip, pounding the pavement, as they always say.
Absolutely.
All right. Oh, that's very cool. I like that list.
Thank you.
Very nice. Okay. So every day we have a segment called State Your Motto. The idea here is that, this movie's official title is Live Free or Die Hard. Live Free or Die is the official state motto of the state of New Hampshire, which obviously has absolutely no connection to this movie. Which it's a nice tagline, but that's it. So the what I decided to do is I have a little game. Every day I'm going to choose a different state, and I'm going to give you three choices, and you have to tell me which is the real motto of that state.
Ooh.
Okay, now one thing is every one of these mottos is a real motto. It's just from different states. You have to
Oh,
figure out
okay.
which is the right one that connects to the state that you have on that particular day. So let's see if you can guess what the first state is that I'm going to give you. Come on, Nick. What state do you think I'm going to give you?
Oh, for me, sorry.
Yes,
I'm
for
gonna
you.
assume you're gonna say Maryland.
That is correct. I'm going to say Maryland. How did you guess?
Was shot in the dark.
Exactly. Okay. So again, all three of these are real mottos, but only one of them is the real motto of Maryland. Okay, you just have to tell me which one it is. So number one, justice for all. Number two, strong deeds, gentle words. And number three, liberty and independence.
Okay, so not at all what I was thinking in my head. Would you?
These are state mottos. I'm not talking about what you have on the license plate.
That's, and in my head, I was like, I've read so many license plates, I'm gonna be good to go. So in my head, I'm sitting there, I'm like, I'll wait till he says the one, and then you didn't. I'm like, oh would you?
What is on the license plate in Maryland?
Not any of those. Would you mind reading those three again? I'm sorry.
Okay, number one, justice for all. Number two, strong deeds, gentle words. Or number three, liberty and independence.
I want to say three. No, yeah, I want to say no. Yeah, I'm going to stick with three.
And that is incorrect.
Yeah.
The true answer is the second one, strong deeds, gentle words.
The worst part, yeah, I was between those two. And as soon as I said Liberty, and I'm like, no, that can't be it. That could literally be any of the other northeastern states, but embarrassing. Don't even know my own state.
Right. It's actually an Italian phrase, fatti maschi parole femmine, something like that.
Why would it be Italian?
I have no idea.
Okay.
You ask a very good question
Yes.
that I do not know the answer to. All right, so Nick, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Nick Rehack?
They can find me in the state of Maryland, not understanding at all what my state motto is, but they can also find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com. Specifically, two programs, Lyrical Innuendo, Bubba Weed and myself take a look at a song from the annals of rock history, and we determine if it's about sex, drugs, or good old-fashioned rock and roll. There's another program I'm on, well, with Jason Soto. For a while, I was saying it was a show that is new to me, but really, I am a journeyman at this point. Essentially, Jason is a Mystery Science Theater 3000 super fan, and he has brought me on for a journey. He has been a Sherpa. We have watched every single episode, or we are watching, excuse me, every single episode of Mystery Science Theater from the beginning. Yes, even the KTMA era. And we're just going to keep going and going until I think both of us drop dead because we're realizing we record every 2 weeks. And there's a lot of episodes out there. So this is one of those in it for the long haul. You're going to hear me grow up. You're going to hear me talk about my daughter as she grows up. Like there's a lot that's going to be covered as we go through, but it's a
You're
lot
gonna
of
be talking
fun.
about your
It, exactly.
grandkids.
It's wow. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised. But it's become a labor of love. It's great. It's fun. So check it out again. Both of those over at rabbitholepodcasts.com.
Right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieaboutminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieaboutminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.